The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. Back in 2002, I interviewed a guy named Adam Davies. He was in Chicago on a book tour, and I reached him by phone, and he had just published his first novel, The Frog King. And I didn't know anything about him or much about his history, but I assumed it was a fairly autobiographical novel. And based on that knowledge, after reading it, I figured, well, maybe he had annoyed some people with this book. And it was true. And all these years later, I Googled him, and I saw a couple of trade reviews of this book, one in Kirkus and the other in Publishers Weekly, where they just lacerated him. They eviscerated him. They just tore him to shreds because he had worked as an editor at Random House. And apparently he didn't enjoy the experience. And it was obvious that he was not a model employee. He really made people angry when he published the book. Nobody liked it in publishing. And that's the reason why, I'm sure, it never became a bestseller. I was surprised a major publisher published it. But when the guy who called me about it, the publicist over at Riverhead Books, when he called me, he said, Vic, I think this is your kind of book. And I agreed with him after I read it. I thought it was a brilliant book. It's funny. It's sad. It's really intellectual. Lots of new words in it. And I thoroughly loved it. Let's listen now to Adam Davies and listen to him kind of perk up when he realizes, holy smokes, this guy actually read this darn thing. Let's listen.
Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO, and as you can tell, I have someone on the phone waiting to talk to you. He joins us by telephone from some posh and swanky hotel in Chicago. His name is Adam Davies. His debut novel has just come out. It's called The Frog King, and it's described as a love story. Adam, welcome.
Hi, Vic. Thanks.
This is quite a mythical journey for you, Adam. I understand that just a few years ago, you were going to Kenyon College, and your career in publishing was ahead of you, and now you're published.
Yeah, it's been a really strange journey. I worked for 3 years in New York as probably I was the worst assistant of all time at Random House, and I was a very bad assistant attached to very good editors, and so I had a lot of opportunity to work with really exciting books. I worked on Colin Powell's book, for example. I actually hung up on Colin Powell. It was one of my first experiences with an office phone, and I was not sure how to transfer, and so I hung up on him before I could figure out how to transfer him correctly. But, yeah, I was 3 years there, and then I decided that I wanted to try to work on my own book, so I had to leave the city and leave publishing, and it's been about 4 or 5 years doing that.
It took you 5 years to write this, huh?
It took about 3.5 or 4 years, pretty much nonstop work. But then there's an additional, 9 or 12 months with sort of editorial delay with the publisher and so on, and waiting for the usual, a book is a lot like a baby. From the second it's ready to go on the shelf, from the second the manuscript is finished, it takes about 9 months for it to be produced.
But all babies are different, and in this case, the baby is debuting in paperback. Explain.
Yeah, that is something that publishers have been doing a little bit more lately. And, the problem is that when you're a nobody like me who's got no fans out there, his first novel, I haven't published any stories in The New Yorker. No one had ever heard of Adam Davies. When you have somebody like that, it's tough to get books in their hand. And when you price books at $25 or $30 a pop for hardcover, that really diminishes your market. So what people are doing, it's kind of like mainlining the book straight to the reader. You get to print more copies, and you get to price it around $13, which, actually, I don't buy a lot of $25 hardback books. So it brings you to a bigger market, and that's what every author wants. They all want readers. I mean, if people offered struggling writers to publish their book and give them away, they would probably say okay.
It's kind of like straight to video, huh?
Yeah, it's a little bit like straight to video, except I think that it accesses a wider audience.
Well, sometimes those movies that go straight to video are huge hits.
Oh, is that right? I don't think I know much about those.
Well, that's what I've heard. I'm more into books than video.
Yeah, same here.
My guess is Adam Davies. The book is The Frog King. Where did the idea for this come from?
Boy, that's a good question. I left New York sort of in a fit of failure. I had failed at love. I was failing at the office. I was terribly in debt. And I was not doing what I had all my life wanted to do, which was write a book. And it's difficult to gather the courage to try to write a book, you know, because so many people you meet at cocktail parties talk about wanting to write a book or this or that, but so few people are actually willing to try to make the commitment to it, to do it, and for good reason. It's really terrifying. I mean, you know, you have to work really humiliating jobs, and you have to forego health insurance, and a lot of the time, you know, you forego adult relationships. You know, I mean, today I'm 30 years old, and it's very exciting to have my book come out, for sure, and things worked out okay in the end. But, you know, there are long years when I was, you know, hunched over my desk in Gollumish solitude and, you know, poor neighborhoods sweating this book out, which I never knew if would even see the light of day. So it took a lot out of me.
Your hero is named Harry, or Hairball, if you prefer. And Harry works for a publishing company, as the book opens. He's an editorial assistant, and he's in love. He's in love with a woman named Evie.
Right.
And he drinks a lot.
Yeah, Harry's got a lot of problems. And this was an especially sort of difficult problem for me as a writer, because as a writer, I'm not really interested in the sort of Charles Dickens-type hero, you know, where you have some really great kid who's been cruelly orphaned or who's been victimized by the world in some other savage way that he had nothing to do with, and then he triumphs over the cruelty of the world. I'm not interested in those kinds of people. Unfortunately for me, I'm interested in the guy who knows right and wrong and chooses wrong anyway, because he's weak, or because he's sad, or because he's selfish, or because he hasn't grown up yet. And so this situates you with a narrator who's possibly pretty unsympathetic. And as you pointed out, Harry has got a lot of problems. He is incredibly selfish. He's deceitful. He's lazy. One of the characters says he's so lazy he should have a catheter and bed sores. and that's a fair description. But, you know, the book is called The Frog King because it deals with the possibility of transformation. You know, everyone knows the fairy tale, you know, princess sees a frog, she kisses frog turns into a, you know, hunky prince.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I wanted to write about. I wanted to write about love and forgiveness and the possibility of change. And in a way, it's kind of about this complicated majesty of suffering through the punishment that you have brought on yourself, I guess. And that then the question is, can someone who is slimy, you know, someone who is defective in that frog-like way, can someone be changed into something beautiful and good?
And that's what the reader has to find out by reading the book. It's called The Frog King. I guess if I had to pick a theme, I would say it's the search for some sort of universal truth or ignorance of same.
Right. Yeah, Harry is mystified by the world and doesn't understand his place in it and really how to behave as a human being. And he has to figure these things out on his own, and he really does not do a very good job.
Tell us about Evie.
Evie is the kind of woman that almost no man would deserve to date, and certainly not Harry. But yet somehow, by the usual trick of luck, Harry's involved with her. They've been dating for several years, and he's desperately in love with her. She is an assistant who works with him at the publishing house, Prestige Publishing. And whereas Harry can't be bothered to get into the office in the AM, and he gets into other dire trouble at the office, Evie works very hard, and she has genuine talent, and she has a very promising future ahead of her. She also is afflicted with a condition that's known as endometriosis, which is a very heartbreaking medical condition where the lining of the uterus actually breaks away and drips throughout the body. And because this material is uterine, it bleeds every month. And so it can be incredibly uncomfortable, and it can actually be entirely debilitating depending on how bad your case is. And Evie's case is especially bad. And so Harry and Evie really cannot have sex. Mm-hmm. And this is, Harry uses this as an excuse to explain his wandering.
Mm-hmm.
However, that changes.
Harry loves her very much, but he can't say the word, can he?
No, he can't. And it's hard for Harry to know for sure if it's because of his sort of aesthetic principles. He's very snooty about his own tastes. He thinks he's very discriminating. And I think a lot of young people who work in the arts are this way, especially young men. And Harry thinks that all the books that he works on are not good enough for him. And he thinks that all the music that his friends listen to is not good enough for him. And he wants to tell Evie how much he loves her, but he can't bring himself to do it, in part because he thinks, you know, other people go around, you know, people who he despise go around and say, you know, I love you, Schnooky Bear. And it doesn't mean that much.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry is struggling to find a way to use different words to explain how he feels. But instead, he ends up saying nothing.
You're listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. Going back to 2002, an interview I did with a guy named Adam Davies for his very first book. It was a novel called The Frog King. And you're hearing about it on your public radio station, 91.3 WYSO, introducing you to your new favorite song. The Book Nook will continue right after this. The Best of the Book Nook continues, going back to 2002, to this conversation with Adam Davies.
You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest is Adam Davies. His novel is The Frog King, a love story. He joins us by telephone from Chicago, where he's on book tour. And I must say, he really just has one good friend, doesn't he? That's this artist person.
Oh, his friend Kino?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a very interesting art form that Kino's into.
Yeah, she's kind of an extreme artist. And what she does is she creates pieces that force people to physically move out of their way so that they have to literally view something from a new perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like the concrete cars.
Yeah, that was her first really successful piece. She would make life-size concrete castings of cars, different models, and leave them around the city in parking spaces and on sidewalks and in Columbus Circle and cause terrible traffic jams. And, of course, the police consider her a vandal, and the art community considers her a hero.
Uh-huh.
And she also is the voice of Harry's conscience. Harry, he suspects the life that he should lead, but he cannot see it. And Kino sees it, and she doesn't take any garbage from anybody, including her friend Harry.
And Harry is an obsessive person. He's constantly thinking. He's constantly talking to himself. He's running all over the place. He's drinking. He's a complete wild man.
He is, and he doesn't understand what he needs in order to feel okay. And, of course, I mean, the tragic irony that happens in most of these types of stories is it's right there from the beginning, of course, with Evie, but he does not see it because he needs to grow up, and he's not sure how to. He's sort of figuring it out on his own, and he's not seeing very clearly.
My guest is Adam Davies. His book is The Frog King. It's a love story. Recently, we had Stefan Fatsis on the program. His book, Word Freak, has just come out in paperback. And I learned...
Great book.
Isn't it a great book?
Oh, fantastic.
I feared you were into it because after I read Stefan's book, I said to myself, I don't think I'm ever going to see another book with so many new words to learn. And then I read your book, and I'm impressed.
Oh, thanks. That actually is one of the chief pleasures in writing this. And it was tough for me because I have a father who is very prominent print journalist.
Oh.
And he most recently was the publisher of the Baltimore Sun. And so he has, his sensibility is the AP style. And I am very un-AP style. And when I was growing up as a kid, he always thought that I was very excessive as a writer. And his famous line to me was, you need a good editor.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I was 12 years old, I would offer up a poem, you know, that I had written about tennis balls. And he would read it and he would say, you need a good editor. And so, you know, I grew up sort of doubting my own aesthetic. But these words, these underemployed, rare, really beautiful words, I couldn't help it. I sort of felt about them the way that you might feel about orphans. You know, I felt like they were lonely, and they needed sunlight, and they needed to play, and they needed a home, and they needed love. And, you know, I want to give those poor orphaned words the home that they deserve.
Well, your book is full of these kinds of word orphans, and then there's a real orphan. And I'm guessing there's a kinship there because... This guy, Harry, he loves these words, and he hates to admit it, but he loves this little orphan, too.
Yeah, that's Birdie, the homeless girl. The novel is set in the New York City book publishing world, but my narrator lives in Alphabet City in the East Village, set in the same neighborhood and during pretty much the same time as when Rent was going on, when in real life the squatters were fighting it out with the police. So it's a neighborhood with a lot of homelessness.
Uh-huh.
And this little girl, Birdie, was born into homelessness. And she befriended Harry when Harry was doing some volunteer work at a children's hospital. And she sort of has become attached to him. And Harry is mystified by it and sort of irritated also a little bit by it. He doesn't know how to deal with this little girl who wants to see him. You know, she wants to be his friend. And so Harry, in his typical confused way, sort of retreats from her. But he can't help but love her at the same time. And she has a lot to show Harry about his goodness, which he does not yet see in himself.
And he used to read books to her. He used to read stories to her in the hospital.
That's right.
And now that she's just a homeless child that he encounters occasionally on the street... A lot of times he's been drinking. Well, most of the time he's been drinking.
That's true.
And he responds to her in very oblique ways. He has created his own language without really even thinking about it, where he says things to her that are meant to kind of put her off and not make sense, but she remembers them all, and they have this really bizarre communication.
That's right. He will say offhand things to her of his own usually drunken invention. Something good happens, he says, slap shot. He tells her that that's an expression of delight. And he, when somebody is looking at you weird, he says that they're looking at you, they're acting all Ezra Pound.
Uh-huh.
And so, unfortunately, because Harry's drunk when he makes these things up, when he's sober the next time and he sees her around and she starts saying things like this to him, he does not understand what she means. Because he can't remember what he's said, and so they end up having these conversations in which Harry is baffled about what's going on, and he just has to sort of wing it. And so he does not sort of understand why Birdie is trying to be a part of his life, but he also literally does not understand what she's saying to him. And all those confusing expressions that he does not understand, in a way, are kind of saying the same thing, which is, of course, I love you.
Hmm. The book is The Frog King. A love story. Adam Davies wrote it. He joins us in the Book Nook today. And this love of words, it comes through so clearly as we read your book. I was picturing you, as I read your book, perusing Rabelais or James Joyce. And you're definitely overdosing on words.
Yeah, I love all those guys.
I could tell.
Yeah, and it's just so exciting. I mean, actually, one of the things that I'm proudest of is that the guy who is the editor of the Oxford English Dictionary, North America, has read this book and is going to use it as examples of usage in the OED.
No way.
Yeah, so that when you come, you know, sometimes when you come across an unusual word, you know, there'll be a parentheses and there'll be a quote from, you know, Shakespeare or Mark Twain or somebody. And in this case, there are going to be a handful of usages from this book. And, you know, that to me is kind of like winning the Oscar. I mean, I know that all your listeners right now are thinking that I'm the nerdiest person on earth, but there really couldn't be anything more delightful to me than being in the OED. It's the grand prize.
Hey, I'm telling you, I'm jealous. In fact, just last week, Oxford contacted me, and they're apparently putting out a short version of the OED. I don't know how you can do that. But
yeah, neither do I. It must be written in on a microscope or something.
I don't know. Anyway, they wanted me to review it, and I thought, well,
wow,
that could be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's coming out, I think, in September.
Oh, no kidding.
No kidding. My guest is Adam Davies, and the book is The Frog King, A Love Story, and he joins us in the Book Nook today. You have a fellow in there who loves playing word games with Harry. This is a guy in the office, a guy who's very successful. Harry aspires to be like him. And they have this fun little game they play where they try to stump each other on words. And I got a real kick out of that.
Yeah, this is the sort of vision of life that Harry wants for himself. This guy, Jordy, is in charge of the dictionary at Prestige Publishers. And he's happily married. He lives in a nice apartment. He has dogs. He has a job that he likes. He's treated with respect. He comes into the office on time. And he does what he likes, and he gets paid for it. And Harry is so envious, he can't stand it. And they are awkward friends with each other. I mean, Harry does not easily make friends with anyone. And so he has a difficult time sort of knowing how to treat a person who is a friend. But nevertheless, they have these encounters in which they try to outdo each other with their obscure word knowledge. And Harry always loses, although he tries. And
well, he has to cheat. He has to do phonies to win.
That's right. That's right. He acts like Don King, and he just makes stuff up.
There are numerous emblems of Harry's sense of irresponsibility and disconnection, and one of these is this manuscript for a, I think it's a calendar, and mm-hmm. he seems to have misplaced it.
Yeah, this is one of Harry's big problems. Harry is going to be fired any second, and he knows this, and he needs to salvage his career. And the reason he's going to be fired is because there's this manuscript he's supposed to be working on, a calendar. And he's lost the manuscript. Now, normally in the world of publishing, this would not be a big deal because everyone uses computers and there are always many copies of the manuscript around. However, this author is an old-timer and does everything on a manual typewriter. So this is the only copy of the manuscript on Earth. And Harry, of course, is supposed to make copies as a security measure, but he did not. So he's lost it. And his boss is asking him to produce it. They're behind schedule. They need to put it into production. And Harry says, oh, yeah, no problem, no problem. I'll do it tomorrow. And he says, yeah, no problem, no problem. I'll do it tomorrow. And he just cannot find it to save his life. So in order to salvage this career that he knows is about to disappear because of his own carelessness, he has embarked on an affair with another woman, a woman who's powerful in the publishing industry and can save his career.
My guest is Adam Davies. Are you available?
Oh, no. Not those words. Please, not those words.
Oh, I love that. You obviously had so much fun writing this book. The Frog King is described as a love story, and it really is a love story. And speaking of love, there's a book about love that Harry has rejected, and his girlfriend Evie sees some promise in the book. The book's written by a guy named Drakkar. Now, I know you were making fun of something with this book. I just know it.
Yeah, well, the book originally came across Harry's desk in slush. And slush is something that most publishers in real life and in the world of the book do not deal with. And slush is manuscripts that are sent in unagented. So they're just manuscripts that people send in from all across the country, you know, Dear Random House or Dear Prestige Publishing, Dear Publisher X. And I myself did work on the slush pile when I was at Random House, and you would see some really crazy stuff. People, this one guy would send in board games that he had made by hand. I mean, he thought we were Milton Bradley. He thought that we were going to produce his board game. And we would write him rejection letters saying, you know, we do not do this, and he would send another board game. So it's a pretty disheartening enterprise for the assistants at a publishing house. Now, Harry has seen this manuscript, which is called Love is a Ladder. It's a self-help book, and this is exactly the kind of thing that Harry so hates and that he so derides, and so he, of course, rejects it. However, Evie also sees the manuscript, and she does not think it stinks. In fact, she thinks that it's pretty good. So she plucks it from slush, and she submits it to other editors to see if she can generate some in-house support, and she does. Now, she knows that Harry would hate it, and so she does not tell him. And that is one of the things that's hanging over Harry's head, is the possibility that this book might become a success, and he let it slip through his fingers. Of course, the other problem is that Harry read this book and thought it was so trashy, and he thought that it knew nothing about love. But of course, it turns out that it's really Harry who knows nothing about love, because the book itself does go on to become a success.
The book is The Frog King, a love story. Adam Davies wrote it. He joins us by telephone today from the windy city of Chicago, where he's out on book tour, enjoying room service and all the amenities. And I must say, You have a lot of things hanging over Harry's head. He's got the first roommate, and then towards the middle of the book, he loses that housing situation. And then he's got the two roommates, and he's got this problem where he's always stealing things from them, like their alcohol.
Yeah, Harry's home situation is never that great either. And this was an important aspect of the book to me to write about, because as a non-New York City person who moved to New York to try to make it, it was really tough, and I wanted to be faithful to the hardship of life in that city for young people. You know, E.B. White has got this, I'm sure I'm going to misquote this, but E.B. White says of New York that coming to New York is daring to be lucky.
Uh-huh.
And Harry is not that lucky. And of course, he's made a lot of his own luck, but at the same time, the city is chewing him up a little bit, and his home is really a source of antagonism, not a place to which he can retreat. And that is one of the things that he wants most. He wants a home. He wants a place where he can live, and he wants to live there with Evie. And that is part of his justification when he embarks on this affair with the other woman, is that he can save his job, get a new position, make some more money, and then he can finally have a home. He can buy an apartment, and Evie can live in it with him. But of course, he goes about it the wrong way.
And this is a guy who comes from a very affluent family, and he's got a brother who was a heroin addict, and his father is a high-powered attorney who apparently is very well-connected. His mother is always trying to find opportunities for him. She's always trying to get him a gig teaching at a boarding school.
That's right. That's right. His mother is a source of constantly useless advice and meddling. She wants him to live in the country and marry a cookie bacon wife who wears flannels, and she wants him to teach poetry to underprivileged inner city kids, and she wants him to live this Martha Stewart-y life. And one of the few redeeming aspects of Harry is that he tries to refuse that kind of help. He doesn't ask or accept help from his parents. There's kind of a shabby dignity to his suffering. You know, he might be screwing everything up, but at least he's doing it on his own.
And as we follow his exploits, some of which are incredibly pathetic. This is the guy who you see laying on the street, passed out. He's just a mess. And even though he's so ridiculous, it's funny. And I love this little illegal bar that he likes to hang around.
Yes.
The denizens of this place are pretty amazing.
Yeah, that was another world that I really wanted to do sort of the right thing by. You know, there are a lot of heartbreak bars and, you know, bars where people are not listening to music and they're not flirting with their neighbor and they're not tipping the bartender for doing sort of snazzy tricks with the glasses. They're just bars where people go because they haven't had the courage to kill themselves yet. Because it's the only place where they can obliterate their awareness of their own life. I mean, they're places, they're like retirement homes in a way. And Harry is the only young denizen of this particular bar, but he's a very ambitious player there. He's doing his best to fit in.
You're listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. And I loved this debut novel by Adam Davies from 2002. And I love this conversation about it. As the interview went on, it got livelier and more informative and more entertaining. And well, that's just my opinion, of course, but I hope you agree. We'll continue with the Best of the Book Nook right after this. If you're just tuning in, it's the Best of the Book Nook going back to 2002 to my only interview with a guy named Adam Davies. We talked on the phone. He was in Chicago about his first novel, The Frog King.
My guest is Adam Davies. The book is The Frog King, a love story. It's just been published in paperback by Riverhead Books. And it's only been out for a couple of weeks, so this is probably the first you've ever heard about it here on this program. And I must say, I was laughing until late into the night last night. There's a surrealistic aspect of the book, and yet you'll be reading along something that just sounds completely ludicrous, and then there will be that universal truth. For example, on page 189, and I quote, a conversation's going on, and one person says, "Did she mention in the chat with Madeline anything about a purple penis?" And the answer is, "There are many purple penises for your information." And then the reply, "You know, one of the real problems with being dishonest all the time, you think everyone else is too. Lies abuse their victims, but they corrupt their speakers." Now, that's pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah, you know, so much of this book is about deception, and it's about betrayal, and it's about, hopefully, forgiveness. And I have this narrator who is so deeply flawed and so steeped in falsehoods and deception. All his reflexes are wrong. I mean, if someone, you know, Holden Caulfield would just as easily lie about going to the grocery store. You know, he'll say that he's coming back from the ballet just because it's a reflex for him. And this is kind of the way it is with Harry. And the problem with that is that, yes, you can pull the wool over other people's eyes, you know, and so on and so on, but what happens to the person who keeps on doing this? You know, what happens to the person who makes this kind of deceit a way of life? It ends up that the person who he corrupts really is himself.
Well, I think your humor is amazing, and I think readers that want a good chuckle would really enjoy this book. It's called The Frog King, A Love Story. And I know the humor is a cloak over much heavier material. In fact, there's a lot of stuff that's frankly obscene.
Can we read those parts?
No. Well, okay, I'll read one part. Learn the ancient trade of bagpipe repair. That's kind of obscene.
I guess it is.
So it's really great to talk to someone who's so fresh, and the book is so fresh, and you're not jaded yet. You know, I'll give you, a couple, three more weeks, Adam?
No, I don't think that'll ever happen. You know, you watch interviews with athletes, and they end up saying these ridiculous sort of sound bites that really amount to nothing. They're kind of like verbal fluff, and they say, you know, I'm just happy to be here. I'm just glad to help the team. I just want to be a part of the success. But actually, that's kind of how I feel. I mean, you know, during the long years when I was writing this, I never really thought that it was going to see the light of day. I mean, I didn't write it because I had a contract, certainly, and I didn't write it. I did not have an agent, and, you know, no one really... You know, this is the same thing that almost every young writer faces. And so, really, I can't believe that the book is on the shelf, that I'm talking with you today, and that all of it happened. I'm just completely astonished.
Well, frankly, Craig Burke called me, and he doesn't call me that often, but every time he does, he has something tremendous. And he called me up about this book about a month ago, and he said, you're going to love this book, and he's never done me wrong, and I don't think he's a pom-pom for that.
No, neither do I. Neither do I. Now, that actually was one of the things that made me nervous about this book. When the woman who is now my agent agreed to represent me, we were talking about the book, and she said, Adam, this book is going to make a lot of people very angry. And, of course, she's referring to people in the publishing trade who I used to work with, and...
No,
she's right.
No way.
It has made a lot of people angry.
Has it really?
Oh, yes. I haven't received, I've received only one letter of, or note or phone call of congratulation from anyone I used to work with.
So the Random House people are kind of shutting it down, huh?
They've been very noncommittal.
Not even Horst? Not even Horst wrote you?
Horst, of course, is a fictional invention.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you really think that these people see themselves in some of these characters?
Publishing is a very, very tight community. There was one particular person in New York who was a model for one of the characters, and or a partial model. I mean, every character is an amalgam of something.
Uh-huh.
But
it's not Irwin Applebaum, is it? Just kidding.
I can never tell. I'm looking right now at the photograph of my lawyer, and he's telling me, I can imagine his words. I keep this photograph with me to keep me strong.
You know who Irwin is, don't you?
I don't know Irwin.
Oh, okay. He's over at Doubleday.
Oh, editor?
I can never keep track. Random House is such a huge, sprawling house. I can't keep track of all the imprints over there anymore.
I know. They're enormous.
But I'm guessing that Riverhead isn't part of Random House.
No, Riverhead is a part of Penguin.
Okay.
And they do a lot of really exciting people. They do Nick Hornby, and they do Juno Diaz, and they just published that wonderful novel, The Russian Debutante's Handbook by Gary Steingart. So it's an exciting place to be. They also do the Dalai Lama, which is good for me because I need to be as close to all the spiritual pieces I can get. I'm hoping some of that's going to rub off on me. So far, not much luck.
I think that's very interesting that you worked at Random House and that these people are offended. I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, actually, what I was going to say is that one person who was, like I said, a partial model of one of the characters, I called this person up and I said, look, you know, I just want you to hear this from me first, that you know, this book that I've written is coming out, and I want you to know that I hope that you like it, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And this person said, oh, I know. I said, well, what are you talking about? I just sold it last night. And she said, oh, yeah, we all know. Everybody knows.
Oh, really?
So between Tuesday night at 5 p.m. when I sold it and Wednesday morning at 10 a.m., everyone at Random House knew.
That's some pretty hot email activity.
That's exactly what publishing is like. Mm-hmm. You will never find a more... I mean, I've worked in academia, and I've worked on Capitol Hill. I've worked for a congressman, and I've worked in publishing. And nothing comes close to publishing in terms of it's fiery gossip and its incestuousness.
Well, you've just opened another door. What were you doing on Capitol Hill?
I was one of these summer congressional interns. I worked for free, and I, posted a lot of letters, and I gave a lot of tours of the Capitol. And I worked for a guy who was at the time the head delegate of Connecticut. And every day he would come into work, and he would say, Davies, good to see you. Good job. Okay, you're fired.
Really?
And that's what he said to me every day. That was his idea of a joke.
How cute.
Yeah, wasn't it adorable?
I'm guessing he's a Democrat.
Yeah, he was. Actually, he lost in a very publicized election. He lost by 3 or 4 votes. They had to recount it 3 times.
That's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And what session was that during? What years?
Well, I was there in 92. 2002, I believe.
Okay. Was this when you were still in college?
That's right. It was a summer job.
And you went to Kenyon College. What was that like?
That's right. Kenyon was fantastic. I knew that I needed to be somewhere small. They had a very good English department. And Kenyon was that. And the best thing that Kenyon did for me as a reader and as a writer was, you know, most English departments and most English classes, they sort of have this sense of reverence about the books you read. And reverence is totally inimical, first of all, to free thought and also to creative work. And so if you read Henry James and you felt like you did not like Henry James, you know, as a high school student, you feel like a failure because you feel like you just don't get it.
Uh-huh.
And something must be wrong with you. And Kenyon was such a bastion of free thought and of intellectual independence and adventurousness that it really schooled out of me that reverence that I had from high school. And it made me a lot more creative and freer, you know, which is a debt I'll never be able to pay back to those guys. I mean, it was a really fantastic place to be as a young writer.
In your book, you have an aside where I think it's at a party and some people are making a joke or laughing about something to do with the Western canon and Harold Bloom. We've had Harold Bloom on this program a couple of times. He's a legend and somewhat conservative in his views. These are the kind of books that you're talking about where if you don't get it and Professor Bloom says it's one of the great books, you really do feel like you've lost.
Yes, well, I hope I'm not going to get hate mail from Harold Bloom now. I think he may have just done me deep damage.
Well, Harold listens to this program every day. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, I really like Harold Bloom. He's actually a very sweet, very misunderstood guy. He wants people to like him. But it's hard because he keeps opening his mouth and saying things. Like when he went after the Harry Potter books, I don't think that made him any friends.
No, but that's, you know, that's just, what do I want to say about that? I think that, you know, Jonathan Franzen, there was no reason for him to make that stink about the Oprah Book Club. I mean, every book that's read is good. There's no bad about reading books. And similarly, I mean, why would someone like Harold Bloom sort of bother to debate with anybody about Harry Potter? I mean, it seems sort of like a waste of time.
Well, he's fighting. He's a voice in the wilderness, and I understand where he's coming from. Speaking of Jonathan Franzen, I see the corrections just came out in a paperback on Picador, and we're trying to get him on this program, but I think he's a tough person to book.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. I mean, you know, I love the corrections as much as everybody. I mean, I when I read that book, I was aghast. I was staring at the page with my mouth open. It was so beautiful. I mean, it is a masterpiece. It's just a shame that thing with the Reading Club had to go down the way it did.
Well, I think he killed the Reading Club, frankly.
Yeah, I think he probably did too.
It's too bad. My guest is Adam Davies. The book is The Frog King. It's a love story. He joins us by telephone from Chicago. Any comments from Papa on this one?
Yes. My dad actually has been very gracious and kind about it. I think, you know, I mean, fathers and sons have a difficult time understanding each other often. I mean, actually, that my second book is a father-son story. I'm working on it right now under contract with the same publishers.
Oh.
And, but, yeah, I mean, he's been very good about everything. And I think he's actually proud because there was a time when, you know, his aesthetic judgment was so different from mine. And, you know, I mean, everybody wants to be a writer. You know, lots of people go around saying that they're writers, and it's kind of a stylish thing to say. And now that I've been sort of legitimized, I think that he has come to a new, I mean, respect is not exactly the right word, but I think that he recognizes me as an adult in a way that maybe he did not before.
Well, I must say, I'm very impressed by the book, The Frog King, and every year I go over my list of interviews from the year, and I do almost 200 a year.
Whoa.
And this book, in my top 10, I think
wow,
you're a shoo-in right now, Adam. So.
Oh, God, thank you so much. I can't tell you how much that means to me.
You know, it really knocked me out, and I love to laugh, and I love to think and learn new words, and you take us on quite a little joyride, quite a little trip here.
Oh God, you know, I can't tell you how exciting it is for me to talk to people who've read it, because, you know, like I said, I've been working on it for so long in this really terrible solitude, and all of a sudden I'm meeting people who I've never met before who are saying really nice things. I mean, that demonstrate that. I mean, they've read it. You know, they've read the book, and I feel like somebody out of like a Frank Capra movie, you know, or like somebody who it's revealed that he has this fantastically rich benefactor who's been keeping an eye on him all this time, and everything's going to be okay after all. And so it just means a lot to me to have anybody read it at all.
Adam, I understand you live in San Francisco. Why did you choose that particular city?
Well, I don't actually quite live there yet.
Okay. This book really does have some advanced information.
Yes, it is very
You're
advanced.
Moving there, huh?
That's right. It's like ESP advanced. I've been living in rural Georgia for the last 2 years.
Now, have you been teaching at the University of Georgia?
I was, that's right, yeah.
Okay.
And I miss New York, and I miss the big city. I miss big cities, period. However, New York City itself is kind of, as you might guess, a bad influence town for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm concerned about getting the work done I need to get done on book number two, so I thought maybe I'd move somewhere that was a little more, you know, non-pathogenic.
And, okay. Well, I understand they have lots of Pabst Blue Ribbon out in San Francisco.
Yeah, that's going to be trouble.
I'm just teasing you.
I can combat that with all the tofu restaurants and yoga studios.
There you go. No, San Francisco, what a wonderful town.
It really is. In fact, yeah. my book tour just got back from there. And, you know, it was three or four of the best days of my life recently. It couldn't have been any better.
Isn't it a clean, well-lighted place?
That's right, yeah. I read there, and I read it at two other bookstores in the area. And it's so beautiful and so clean, and the people are so friendly, and there's so much going on. It really feels like it's like a homecoming, even though I've never been there before.
It sounds like your attorney's calling you on the other line.
Yeah, I think they were upset about the Harold Bloom comment.
Or maybe it's Professor Bloom calling you. Anyway, Adam, I imagine you have to go take that call. We really appreciate you taking the time to be with our listeners here in Southwest Ohio and tell us about The Frog King.
Believe me, Vic, it's my pleasure.
And you've been listening to the best of the Book Nook. Adam Davies, recorded back in 2002, our only interview for his first novel, The Frog King. And I Googled him, and I found two really nasty reviews in trade publications. And then I found a fairly positive review in the Baltimore Sun. But that book essentially disappeared because he was writing fiction thinly disguised as, well, whatever it was. It really annoyed his former employers over at Random House. They didn't like it, and they didn't support it, and they didn't publish it, of course, but it got really blackballed, and it's such a small community, the book publishing world, and those people, when you write a book pretending it's fiction and talk about people that they probably recognize that he worked with in the industry, and you say stuff about them that isn't nice, they get you, and they got him. He still wrote books after that. He published at least two more that I know of. And I think it's a brilliant book. If you were listening to the part where we talked about Stefan Fatsis and how he just put out Word Freak, and we both loved it, Stefan's book about being a competitive Scrabble player. And we just had Stefan back on the show again recently for his book Unabridged, his history of the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. And if you love words like I do, if you love playing Scrabble, well, I think you will love this book. It's funny. It's smart. It's bitter, very bitter. He didn't like his time in publishing. And I think it's brilliant. I really do. Even though it got all these bad reviews, you need to read between the lines and check it down. I think it's worth reading. For the best of the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. I've been getting over a little virus. That's why my voice sounds a little bit rough, but I'm back in action here on WYSO. Hope you have a really great rest of your Saturday, And I hope you'll tune in tomorrow for the Book Nook at 10:30 tomorrow morning right here on WISO.